This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a musical celebration of the green with a St. Patrick's debut by an Irish-American chanteuse, a classical music concert by a renowned Russian-American pianist, or a musical cultural exchange with Seoul, singers of United Lands. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. My first guest was raised in New York City on traditional Irish music, plus the sounds of a who's who list of renowned musicians, including Elvis, Louis Armstrong, Louis Prima, Nat King Cole, Peggy Lee, and Frank Sinatra, just to name a few. And as a result, her sound combines Celtic, blues, folk, swing, and jazz into a unique style. She's Tara O'Grady, and she'll make her New Orleans debut this St. Patrick's weekend. We caught up with Tara O'Grady by phone. Tara, welcome to Inside the Arts.
How are you?
Pretty good. What are your thoughts as you gear up to perform in the birthplace of jazz?
Oh, I'm really excited, especially since it's St. Patrick's weekend. It's really a big deal to be in New Orleans during that time, which is my favorite time of year.
Now, you flew on to the music scene in 2010 with the release of your album Black Irish. Tell me about this CD of Irish tunes and how it came to be.
It's funny. I was actually working at Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts, and coming from a musical family, my dad plays Irish fiddle, and I grew up on the traditional Irish music, so there were always songs being sung in the house, and my granny in Ireland would always be teaching me songs, traditional songs. But one day I was in the office, and I was singing Danny Boy to myself, and a jazz pianist happened to be in the office, and he heard me, and he said, "Wow, you know, you should record that song." And I never thought of recording. I had a jazz band I was performing on the side, but he got it in my head, and I said, "You know, why don't I just record a bunch of Irish songs and swing them like Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald?" And he said, "That's a fantastic idea." And I just was kidding. But then I thought, you know what? It is a good idea. I like it. So that's how it all began.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen. Summer's gone, and all the flowers are dying. Tis you, must go, and I must buy.
I tend to swing everything a little faster than it should go. A lot of the Irish songs are very sad. They're full of torment from the immigration process. You know, my mom, she came from Ireland in 1957 to New York. And, you know, you grow up with this kind of sadness of being the child of the immigrant, because there's always half of your heart that wants to be back in the motherland. And so I always felt that. And Danny Boy is such a sad song. Most people take it as a sad song. And I don't want to be sad when I'm singing. So I swing Danny Boy a little more up-tempo. And the song is actually 100 years old, the lyrics, in 2013. And this film director from the BBC in London was making a documentary about it, and he was covering pretty much everyone's version of it, from Elvis Presley to Johnny Cash's version to Harry Belafonte. And surprisingly, he found mine online. I was number 778 on Amazon.com of people who recorded Danny Boy, which is extraordinary. And he found it. He came to New York to interview me for a documentary film, which ended up airing in the UK and having its New York premiere this month. And so I'm in the film with Roseanne Cash and Gabriel Byrne and Judy Collins and Patty Maloney from the Chieftains. And they're all talking about the history of Danny Boy, because it really is an extraordinary song that covers all cultures. It's great to be a part of that history of that song. It's sort of like Amazing Grace. It's the type of song that just goes across the world and has meaning for everyone.
Now, I understand the CD, Black Irish, took you from New York to Tennessee. Was this a big break for you?
Oh, it was great, yeah. When I released Black Irish, it was only 2 months later that these producers in Nashville contacted me and said, have you ever written songs? And I said, no, because I was only recording the Irish traditional song. And they said, would you like to come down and try? And I said, sure. So I'm very competitive. I decided to go down with songs already written. We recorded them, and that was my second album, Good Things Come to Those Who Wait. You know, I never studied music, but I came from a musical family. My dad was always playing Irish music in the house and had traditional musicians over. But what turned me on was my brother's music. He studied jazz, and he had a scholarship to college for playing saxophone, but he plays about 9 instruments. He's mad for the music. So when I was hearing the jazz at home, and I was also hearing the Irish at home, you know, you're hearing both of these two genres, and it's filling your head. That's why when I write melodies and lyrics, they tend to go between the two. So I might have something that sounds a little Celtic, might be a bit of a waltz or something, and then I'll go into something really swinging. So it depends on my mood.
Now, your latest release, A Celt in the Cotton Club, came out in April of last year. It seems that you are in a very creative period, one CD a year?
Yes, and actually, there was a Christmas album in there, too, between between the Nashville one and The Celt in the Cotton Club. I'm on a roll, and I wrote a book, too. You can't stop me. I tend to write on the subway, which is really an interesting place to write. It's strange how melodies and lyrics come to me when I'm on the subway. I don't know why. Or on an airplane. I write when I'm on an airplane.
Is there something about motion that inspires you?
Perhaps. Or being trapped in a canister that's moving. Yeah.
Now, most of the songs on A Celt in the Cotton Club, those are original works by you?
Most of them original. I realize that people love the Irish standards and how I've changed them into you know, they sound more like jazz blues and even bossa novas. And so I made sure for some of my fans to put on a few Irish songs. There's 3 songs that are traditionally Irish: Go Lassie Go, Black is the Color, and Tuura Lura.
Now, what can we look forward to in your New Orleans performances? You're performing at 3 venues, I believe.
Yes. On Thursday, March 13th, I'm going to be at Chitiwawa at 8 p.m. I'm actually coming down because the Irish Network of New Orleans are sponsoring me, and they're going to be hosting a St. Pat's networking party that's open to all at this new venue called Treo. That's on Friday, March 14th. The party starts at 7 p.m., and it's located at 3835 Tulane Avenue. And then on Saturday, March 15th, at 8 p.m., I'm performing at the Irish Cultural Museum in the French Quarter.
Now, when you're performing at the Irish Cultural Museum here in New Orleans, you're going to be playing with some New Orleans musicians, James Singleton and Larry Scala.
I'm bringing my sax player from New York, Michael Hosham, and they're going to be playing my original songs and my Irish songs, so it'll be new for them too, so I'm excited.
It sounds like it's going to be a fun time.
Oh, it's going to be a blast.
I got one more question. I do not know the meaning of Erin Go Bragh. I hope I'm saying that right.
You are saying it right. It means Ireland forever.
Ah, I never knew
I'll
that.
I'll teach you another one. Do you know Cade Mila Falsa?
No.
Well, that's what you all have to say to me when I arrive and I'm walking around New Orleans. It means 1,000 welcomes. Cade Mila Falsa.
And for you, laissez les bon temps rouler.
Oh.
Let the good times roll.
See, we're translating already.
It's going to be a great cultural exchange.
Exactly. New York Irish and New Orleans Irish and everybody else.
Tara, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Tara O'Grady makes her New Orleans debut with performances at several venues Thursday through Saturday. More info at Tara, T-A-R-A, O'GradyMusic.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. 10 years ago, Russian-American concert pianist Alexander Matushkin won the Musical Arts Society of New Orleans International Piano Competition. He went on to international acclaim. Matushkin is back in town this week for an encore performance. He joins us now by phone. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Diane.
Tell me, what is it like to return to the city where you won the 2004 New Orleans International Piano Competition?
It's literally like you're flying back into a fairy tale. I absolutely love being back there.
But I understand that it was an earlier win at the Van Cliburn competition when you were 19 that propelled your U.S. career. Can you take us back to that moment in time?
Oh, yes, I remember it very well. In fact, it was the very first time I came to the United States. That competition was something very special in my life, not only in terms of career, but also in terms of finding very special understanding of what music actually can be in life and what can you do to you, because something very special happened at that competition. As I played there, the competition was translated on the radio, and a few days after the competition, I actually received a letter from federal prison in Texas. And apparently someone was listening to that competition, and that person felt so moved that they found me and they wrote me a letter just to thank me for, you know, for the music and explain how much it meant to them. And it was really, for me, incredibly touching right from the beginning.
Wow. Did I understand you right? You said from a federal prison in Texas?
Yes, wow. A federal prison. And the letter actually started with words. This woman wrote to me that I have been in prison almost as long as you have been alive. And then she went on talking about how, you know, how much this music meant to her and how it made her feel. And I still have this letter. It's very special experience in my life. Yeah.
Tell us more about your background. You are of Russian ancestry. Did you grow up in Russia?
Yes, I grew up in Russia. I was born into a family of musicians. My mom is a pianist. My father plays clarinet. And I have a brother who is a world-renowned, actually very famous flutist, who made his debut at the Lincoln Center last year, playing with the soloist of Metropolitan Opera in a flute quartet. So yes, I've been blessed to be born there. And when I was 15, I moved to study in Germany, so I was in Germany for almost 6 years before I came to the United States.
When and how did you come to the United States?
I came to the United States actually literally 9 days before 9/11, September 2nd. It was really by chance, because at some point my future teacher, Solomon Mikovsky, heard me and he loved my playing, so he invited me to study with him. And back then I was really, really poor. Not that it changed much by now, but back then I didn't have any money. So he sent me literally an airplane ticket so I could come over here. He sent me money for a taxi from the airport. And that's how I ended up in New York.
And where did you wind up studying?
I ended up at Manhattan School of Music.
And you're still living in the United States at this point?
And actually this year I was invited onto a faculty of Manhattan School. So yes, I'm still in New York. 13 years later.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
When did you know that music was your calling?
The truth is, I didn't really have a choice. Since both of my parents are musicians, I have been surrounded with music ever since I was born. I never even thought that there is a life outside of music. But right from the beginning, you know, I loved it. And when I was sometime in the middle school, I won a little prize in the local competition, and that made me very popular with girls in my grade. And then I thought that I definitely should be a musician.
Tell me, what will you perform in New Orleans?
First, I'll start with this set of Chopin etudes, which is one of the most beautiful sets ever written to me. It's really, it's a story full of, you know, if you play from first to the last piece without breaks, it's a story full of love, passion, there's a revolution, there are all kinds of emotions in there, and they all come together to a very exciting story. And then I'm bringing, for the first time, I believe, in the United States, I'm bringing three pieces by leading Cuban composers. One piece is really imitating a Cuban drum instrument, which is, you know, I'll be hitting the strings, I'll be hitting piano, not just the keys. There is one piece that's by Leo Brower that's based on a painting of a wonderful Cuban painter. And then there is one piece that really imitates wonderful Cuban jazz, something like Buena Vista Social Club.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be quite an exciting moment in the concert. And of course, you know, Rhapsody in Blue, it became a symbol of American music. And originally it was performed by Gershwin as a solo piece before he put it for piano and orchestra. So that will conclude that concert.
Now, are you going to have the opportunity to interact with students while you're in town?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, there are several master classes that I'll be giving while I'm in New Orleans. Really looking forward to hearing students, to meeting students, and hopefully being, you know, able to be an ambassador of Manhattan School, maybe inviting some of the most talented ones to continue their education in New York.
What will be most memorable for audiences attending your concert at the Marigny Opera House?
Well, I'm hoping that it's going to be from the first to the last note, the experience that they'll remember. But really, every single composer and doing every composition has a very special story and feeling behind it. And hopefully it will leave an impression on everyone.
What would you say you're most proud of today in your career?
I will never forget my New Orleans competition. There were so many moments in that competition when your emotions go up and down like a roller coaster. People I met in New Orleans, they're extremely special people. You know, let's say when I played last round in New Orleans and everybody was waiting for the announcement of results, there was this lady that she liked me so much. She actually came up to me before the results and she told me, "It doesn't matter what the judges decide. I just want to tell you how much I enjoyed it, how much it meant to me, and I want to give you something. But I don't have anything." And you know what she did? She took off her earrings and she gave it to me.
Oh,
and
my
it
goodness.
Happened at the New Orleans competition. And I see, you know, I lost one earring, but I still have another one here in New York and I'm keeping it. And I've never met this lady after that. She just came up to me back then and gave me earrings and that's it. I've never seen it.
Oh, that's just beautiful. Well, Alex, enjoy your time in New Orleans. And thanks so much
thank
for talking with
very
me.
Very much. I appreciate it, and thank you for having me.
The Musical Arts Society of New Orleans, MASNO, presents acclaimed Russian-American pianist Alexander Matushkin in concert at the Marigny Opera House, 725 St. Ferdinand Street, Sunday at 2 p.m., with a reception to follow. More info at masno.org. You're listening to the sounds of soul, singers of United Lands. Four singers from four continents developing international and cultural relationships through vocal music from around the world. The group is returning to town for their seventh annual week-long residency with the Symphony Chorus of New Orleans. And joining me now to talk about this musical exchange program is Symphony Chorus Director Stephen Edwards. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane. I'm happy to be here.
Can you tell me which countries and continents are represented by this year's Soul Quartet?
This year's countries are Croatia and Nigeria, Taiwan, and Uruguay. So we have Europe and Africa and Asia and South America.
Now, how were these singers chosen for the residency?
The group Singers of United Lands is a nonprofit organization that's based in Michigan. And every year, their executive director conducts an international search to put together this quartet. People apply from all over the world. And during the fall, they are selected. And then they, once they're selected, they come here and rehearse in January to put together the program that they will tour throughout the eastern United States from January to June.
Now, how is New Orleans so lucky to host this group for the seventh time now? What's the connection with the Symphony Chorus?
Well, part of the connection is just that it's a tradition at this point, and they've been here every year. But I think it's also that the singers enjoy coming here. They have a good time when they're here. They do a lot of traveling and a lot of churches and sort of one-night stands. I think it's a kind of rough tour for them, actually. They work very hard. And when they're here, they get to stay for an entire week. And in addition to singing in our schools and retirement communities and doing a festival program with the Symphony Chorus, they get to go out and be tourists in New Orleans, which everybody likes.
How did this program come about and what's the mission?
The origin of their program came out of their executive director, Marcus LaPrat's experiences in international travel as a choral singer. And after he graduated from college, he wanted to bring that experience to people in the United States. So he founded Singers of United Lands and has put this program together for the last 10 or 12 years.
And what will we get to hear this year?
We will begin with Symphony Chorus of New Orleans and Delgado Community College Chorus and Newman School Chorus, singing one song from each of the four countries. We have a folk song from Uruguay, also Argentina, called Chiu Chiu, which is for chorus and piano and percussion. We then have a Croatian folk song that's unaccompanied called Letovanic. We have a Taiwanese-Chinese piece for women's chorus, flute and piano called Moli Hua. And then we will finish up with probably the most well-known piece of Nigerian choral music, which is Betalehemu, for chorus and percussion. Then the soul quartet will sing for 45 minutes to an hour, and then we'll come back and invite the soul singers to join us in three American pieces. One of the other interesting things about the soul quartet, of course, is that each of the four singers is singing the music of the other three countries. So three-quarters of the repertoire that they are singing is foreign to them. So it's a big learning curve for them to put together a professional-level product when, you know, the gentleman from Nigeria is singing in Chinese and in Croatian. And, you know, and so they all have to learn each other's languages and learn how to represent these things as a quartet. And that's fascinating to see them do that, especially year after year, as we have different combinations of countries.
And why is this musical exchange important for the city of New Orleans?
Well, it's great for us to have this global aspect to our culture, to exchange with visitors from other countries and to see their culture, to share our culture with them. I think it's just important to have an international aspect to what we do.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Singers of United Lands will perform in concert at Most Holy Name of Jesus Church on Loyola University's campus Friday at 7 p.m. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.